Hello and welcome to another episode of the Auto Chat podcast. I'm Alistair Charlton, an automotive and technology journalist, and I'm joined as ever by my friend and fellow car enthusiast, George Turner. Hey George, how's it going?
Hello. Yeah, not too bad, thanks. We've had a 2-week gap.
We have, yeah.
Since we last properly spoke.
But we've been on sabbatical.
Yes, well, you had a birthday last Friday and we did an online whiskey tasting, which was quite nice.
Yeah, it was all right, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I feel like we were the kids in the back of the class not listening to the teacher and throwing notes at each other because we were sort of on a chat.
Not really paying attention. Some people were there taking it quite seriously.
And
I think we were just waiting for it to finish.
I think after 3 or 4 drinks, we weren't taking it entirely seriously, but it was good. I quite enjoyed it. It's the best you can do at the moment anyway for a birthday.
Yeah, well, it's what we did last year for your birthday, an actual whiskey tasting. So, yeah, it was good. They sent us 6 little whiskies in the post, which we all had the same ones.
Yeah, it was good.
I thought it worked quite well.
I can't think what it was called now. Once Upon a Dram or something like that, wasn't it?
Wee Dram or something? Yeah, I
can't remember. What have you been up to then the last couple of weeks? Anything fun? Apart from that, obviously.
Nothing major. Still sat at home. I've done a bit more driving recently.
Yeah.
I've been to the dump twice.
Oh.
Which
those essential journeys are racking up, I suppose.
Well, people that know me know I don't mind going to the dump. I quite like it.
Mm.
So I went, I took my old washing machine because
they're heavy buggers, aren't they?
Yeah, well, a certain company wanted about 50 odd quid to, you know, take
dispose
the old one
it.
Away, install a new one and all that. I'd done it all myself.
Yeah, fair enough.
So at one point I did think, oh, maybe I should have just paid them 20 quid to take this away.
They are really bloody heavy, aren't they? We had to remove a washing machine and getting it down 2 flights of stairs was difficult.
Oh, yeah, because you're on the top floor as well.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't have that problem. But what I have been doing, so since I've been off work and I've just kind of been doing odd jobs here and there, my attire has basically just become an old set of work clothes. So I'm just constantly wearing these tatty old boots, old sort of cargo trousers and a high-vis jacket. And what I found is if you go to the jump looking a bit tatty wearing a high-vis jacket, everybody assumes you work there. So the other day I'd been there 30 minutes, I hadn't even got anything out the back of the car.
Everyone asking you which container to put their white goods in or their wood.
Yeah, but, you know, instead of saying, I'm sorry, I don't work here, I'm sort of so bored. And
I'm willing to help.
Oh, yes. Is that a lithium car battery? Oh, it goes over there in the bin.
So what you're saying is you're now volunteering accidentally at your local dump.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I thought about applying. I thought about writing to the council because I just thought I quite like working at a dump, you know, when the weather's nice.
Yeah,
they have the music on in the background. Yeah. Telling old ladies where to put their, you know, garden waste.
And yeah, you're outside, sort of, and that's all right.
Yeah. So, it wasn't too bad. And I went the first time with the washing machine, and then I had to do a lay-by rendezvous with my dad last week because I had some things I needed to give to him. He had some things we needed to give to me. So we did a sort of, I don't know how many other families have been doing this. We did a lockdown lay-by
rendezvous. Brilliant.
Yeah, just to sort of, you pass you this, pass me that.
Do you park in a car park and flash your lights at each other?
Yeah, a bit like that. But we've got identical cars, so it looks a bit weird.
Like an owner's club.
Yeah. He's there and in the back of his Passat is all full of crap and it was full of bags of rubble.
Mm.
And my dad has this knack of every time he sees me giving me some shit to take to the dump. So he's like, oh, you're off work at the minute. Can you take all this crap to the dump? So I ended up doing 2 trips to the dump and both times I ended up just standing around helping people.
your girlfriend's going to wonder where you've gone. Surely this excuse of, oh, I've just been at the dump for 3 hours. It's going to wear a bit thin, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. Probably doesn't know what I'm up to, but there you go.
No, it is quite satisfying going there and doing that. Like, I remember when I moved house, I hired a van and went to like the proper professional dump next door to the one where people go with Land Rovers to take garden clippings. I went to the pro one where you have to book in with your van and they give you a high-vis jacket. And it's like just throwing stuff into this, what looks like a pit into the centre of the earth. I quite enjoyed it.
I didn't know such a place existed, and now I do, I really want to go.
It's, well, you know the area, the dump on the Wandsworth One-Way system.
Well, I used to work next to that.
There's one next door, and it's really quite hellish. Just the lighting and everything about it, and the smell. Oh, my God, the stench was just extraordinary. And, yeah, slinging stuff down there. And you just, I don't know where it goes. Into the fire of hell, I think.
Probably on a barge down the Thames, mate.
I thought there's probably some poor sod at the end of there sorting through things. But
yeah, they pick it all up in Essex. Anyway. So what have you been doing? You've been out today.
I was out today, yeah. I was up to Gaydon, to Jaguar HQ. Let's go and drive three cars. All sort of small facelifts, but a couple of new versions of the XF and the new version of the F-Pace SUV, which is good fun. When you go, everyone comments how nice it is to get out and go more than 5 miles from home. And yeah, it was good. It was really well organised. These sort of COVID secure events they're doing at the moment, obviously they can't just fly a load of journalists off to a nice hotel somewhere, sort of 20 at a time. Instead, there was myself and I think three other journalists today. I think they can cater for up to six at a time. And yeah, the plus point is you get the car to yourself for the whole time rather than sharing it with someone and having the absolute shit scared out of you by their driving. So that's quite nice. And yeah, cars are good. I can't say too much. The F-Pace is still embargoed for another few days, but the XF I think has already been, I think that's been lifted. And yeah, all new interior, looks great. New infotainment system. They've sort of done the touchscreen stuff well instead of doing it all touch, like we saw from Tesla this week. It's and from Mercedes a couple of weeks ago. It's sort of a sensible approach where a lot of the controls are still physical, but there is a nice sort of iPad-style touchscreen, which is integrated really nicely on the dashboard. Really good interiors from Jag at the moment. Really, really like them. And yeah, they were good. I enjoyed them.
It sounds like it would meet my approval. It's like a hybrid of touchscreen and old school knobs. There needs to be a word for that.
Yeah, it's exactly it. Yeah, I think when I'm writing, it's sort of I describe it as sort of striking a balance between touch and tactility.
Touch and knobs.
Tactility. I just enjoy saying and writing. there are plenty of knob gags in there somewhere.
Yeah, and it's, it sounds like JLR are saving on their drinks bill. If you.
This is very true, yes. I was told that the British press quite like these events because they're just to the point, get on with it, you know, go to Coventry, get in the car, drive it, get back, you've got a little packed lunch for you with a sandwich and a bit of cake, happy days. But apparently our European friends in some of the other regions that would normally be on an international trip, they do quite like the wining and dining. more than the British lot, apparently.
I was a big fan of the XF we took to Le Mans. What was that, like 5 years ago now?
Yeah, that was nice. 2016, I think. Yeah,
that was a really nice car. Really pleasant place to be. Mm. So yeah, I quite like the new Jags.
Yeah, they're good. They've sort of lost that old man sort of air to them, I think. I don't know what the average age of their buyers is. It's probably still fairly high, but... But yeah, I was driving them thinking I could see myself in these. You know, it's a nice place to be, as much as that is a cliche. But yeah, the interiors are spot on. They've got a mild hybrid diesel in the XF now, which is okay. You've got that sort of electric kick from low speed. Quite refined for a diesel. Yeah, good. Not too bad. Some complain, I've heard some sort of Jag fans complain that moving from six cylinders to four cylinders is a step in the wrong direction, but I quite liked it. Decent set of cars. And I'll share more about the F-Pace maybe another time.
What happened on the M40 on the way home?
Yeah. Well, it's been an adventure today. Going up the M40 this morning, about 7 o'clock, I think, some cars ahead of me were sort of acting a little bit weird. Yeah, they just seemed a little bit out of place. I thought, oh, they're all, I don't know, avoiding something or signalling something to someone. And then I could smell sort of burning and saw a bit of smoke. And it was this poor bloke in a Peugeot, I think it was a 206 or maybe a bit newer than a 206. Was it like a 307? Seven or something? I'm not sure. Yeah, smoke coming out of the engine bay, hazard lights on, sort of just slowing down. He just got into the heart shoulder at this point. And I looked across and I could see flashes of orange under the car at the front. So it's given way sort of quite spectacularly.
I was going to say, was it smoke or steam? But actual smoke, actual fire.
Oh, yeah, quite like flickers of flame from...
Not the sort of thing you'd expect from a modern car.
No, not at all. Yeah, I don't know what happened there. I think it's probably what would happen if you ran a car with no oil in for quite a while. But
like most Peugeot owners probably do.
I didn't want to suggest it may have been the owner's fault.
So but what
something
were you in?
Something had let go. I was in my housemate's Audi A1.
Oh, you took the A1.
I did. Yes, das Audi. Yeah, which is 10 years old now, that car.
Yeah, I always sort of think of that as being like quite a new car, because when I lived with you guys, I had the 90s Mondeo, and that was, they were worlds apart.
I think that A1, original A1, is a bloody good piece of design, because it still looks like a new car.
Yeah, my neighbour's got one, and I looked at it earlier, in fact, weirdly, and I thought, it actually looks quite nice from the front. It's got quite a nice stance to it. But when he got back from work yesterday, I was on the drive, and it sounded like it was overheating quite bad. Right. I mean, the fan was going like the clappers when he turned it off. Whether or not, maybe it's his girlfriend's car, maybe he just absolutely floored it home from work. And it's like, oh, I think there's a problem there.
No, it's all right. It's dependable enough. I don't have my own car at the moment, so it makes do. I can borrow that.
The only thing that particular Audi you drove is the S line, isn't it?
Yeah.
And my only complaint
I was
about that
unsure
car,
about mentioning this.
My only complaint about that car was the rear headroom was terrible.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the bone shattering ride that the S line gives you.
Thing is, I've had some pretty terrible rides in my cars of the past, but
they're just too firm. I was asked for some advice on an Audi A3 the other day, and I said just avoid the S-line spec, or at least try one and then try one that's not S-line, because they're so firm. And it's the same with that A1.
And you're not really ever going to do any sport in it. So,
no.
Yeah, but I just remember sitting in the back and having to have my head tilted over. Mm. And I'm only, what, 5'7", 5'8"? And I just thought, someone who designed this was... I mean, I don't know if you've ever had any problems because you're a bit shorter.
I was about to say the same. I'm 5'6 on a good day. And it is really tight sitting in the back of that car for your head. Like, if you move your head ever so slightly towards the window, you realise the roof is right there.
But yeah, otherwise it's been 10 years old. Happy birthday to the car.
Yeah, yeah. No, it does well. I shouldn't complain too much because the owner does listen.
He's also your landlord now.
He is indeed my landlord, yes. but also I did him a favour the other day in that I helped him collect some kitchen flooring from Wickes on a snowy... Was it Saturday? No, Sunday. Snowy Sunday morning. And I helped him using a Bentley Flying Spur V8, which is the obvious choice if you're going to go to Wickes to buy kitchen flooring.
I presume the back seats don't fold down on a Bentley Flying Spur V8.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
I was quite concerned on the drive there that nothing would fit.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when we first moved in and we went to IKEA in a Vauxhall Corsa and managed to fit some pretty bulky stuff in. But then, you know, with these big luxury cars, because the Bentley, obviously, there must be so much stuff in that seat, you know, massages and heaters and...
Well, that's the rear seats. I don't think that one had massage, but they move. You know, the seats go back and forth and recline a lot. And there's a cool box between them, which protrudes into the boot. So no, they don't fall down.
But you managed to get the floor in?
Just about. It was a bit tight. We got most of it in the boot, and then some of it had to sort of go across the back seats and into the front and into my housemate's elbow, who was sat in the front passenger seat.
So did you get to sort of open up the Bentley at all, go on any decent drives, or just to Wickes?
Not really. it's just unfortunate timing all around. Yeah, we are in lockdown at the moment, so you can't really be taking the piss and going too far. You certainly can't go overnight anywhere. Normally I would drive to my my mum's house in West Yorkshire for the weekend. Can't do that. It is work. Yeah, I could drive, but I do have to come back in the same day, which sort of limits range a bit. And then Saturday, admittedly, I was hungover from our whiskey tasting, so I didn't get to drive much until later in the afternoon. And yeah, I had a quick drive. It is a quick thing. it's unnecessarily quick, I think, for such a car, but hilarious at the same time. I've got the stats here. This has come a year or so after the V12 version. It's a little bit down on power. It's 100 horsepower down, but it's still got 520 brake horsepower. It's 4-litre twin-turbo V8. And, it's 2.5 tonnes, but it's 60 miles an hour in 4 seconds and 198 top speed. So it's a bloody quick car. And it sounds good as well if you put it into sport and use the paddles, manual gearbox. And, it's more sporty than you expect it to be.
Sounds like a 170 grand beast.
Yeah, I think they start about 154, something like that. I've not seen a spec list for the one I had, but I imagine it's, close to 200.
And did you appreciate the craftsmanship, the walnut in the dash?
I would rather have had walnut.
I didn't have walnut.
I'm not sure what the piano black trim is. I guess it's wood of some kind. But no, it had a lot of carbon. They'd gone for a real sort of sporty spec on this one, so it was Dragon Red 2, I think the paint is called, and with a black pack, so lots of black details on the outside, carbon trim, and lots of carbon on the inside, which I don't know if it really suits the Bentley. And I found the carbon on the dashboard to be really reflective, so when you're driving along, you can see reflections of stuff passing on the passenger side, which is quite annoying. I don't know, I'd probably buy one in green with like a sort of a more traditional, like you say, walnut and cream leather interior or something like that. It was good fun. It was a real novelty to have. It was entirely coincidental that it turned up on my birthday, but I thought that was quite fun. My neighbours were not amused. The alarm is a bit sensitive and it went off all night, Saturday night and all night Sunday night.
Oh, and you haven't exactly got a parking space either, so I'm guessing you had to do 3 flights of stairs round the block.
Well, no, I couldn't hear it. I never knew it had happened.
Oh, no.
I was told this by 2 different sets of neighbours from 2 different streets. So there's probably a very angry WhatsApp chat aimed at me.
You're on spot in Battersea. Will the absolute prat who owns this Bentley kindly shut it up?
It's not good. We went to get in it to go to Wickes on the Sunday, and a bloke was out in the road with his kids sort of playing in the snow, and the kids go, "Oh, that's the person who owns that car, Dad." And I didn't really think anything of it, and got in the car, and the dad comes and knocks on the window, and I'm kind of used to this happening, and I try to like fob it off straight away, and I always say to people, "Oh no, it's not my car. I'm not some rich kid who's just turned up with a Bentley. You know, it's my job." And he went, no, not interested. The alarm went off all night. I felt awful about it. I said, "I'm really sorry, it's not mine, blah, blah, blah." And then exactly the same thing happened the next day with another neighbour.
Thing is, I guess it's designed to be kept in a lovely, fluffy garage or on a massive driveway of a country hall. Not the on-road parking in Battersea.
Not a side street.
You subjected it to.
No. I mentioned this. It went off as well on the main road, actually, just before it got collected, that I did hear. And I mentioned it to the bloke from Bentley, and he said, "Oh, yeah, actually, I parked it outside my cottage in the middle of nowhere, and it went off as well, so maybe it's faulty." So, not ideal.
Got its alarms from Halfords in the 90s.
Those ones that all had different tunes. They went through like a cycle of tunes, didn't they? Do you remember those?
Oh, God, yeah. I think now you don't hear car alarms as much as you used to, thank God.
Yeah.
Because I think when they were a slightly newer thing, they just used to go off all the time, didn't they?
Yeah. Retrofitted ones, especially ones you could buy from Halfords, and people would fit them to a convertible car and be like, "Oh no, it's got this trick system where if someone puts their arm in it, the alarm goes off with the roof down." They were really sensitive, I recall.
And it's like when people hear a fire bell, you don't assume the car's being nicked. you just think, like, bloody alarm's going off again.
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course. From neither of them, there was no case of, oh, goodness me, is your car okay? We heard the alarm go off all night. Has someone damaged it? No, it was your bloody car alarm was going off. It's your fault.
But, and it did have a fridge in the back.
Yeah, I think it did, yeah, yeah. The Flying Spur, I say I think it did. I didn't put a bottle in it to be chilled, so I'm not entirely sure. But I know the Spur can be ordered with a drinks chiller between the rear seats that's large enough to hold two bottles of champagne.
Yeah, well, if you're
which
a
makes me think, what sort of journey? What sort of journey must you be on where you have to reach for the second bottle?
A long one. I mean,
south of France, I suppose.
Yeah, you, lady friend, back of the car. Yeah, lovely.
But yeah, so that got collected on Monday, and yeah, it was good fun. I'll have that review written soon, hopefully.
It's irritating someone else now.
It's irritating, so exactly. The alarm's going off somewhere else now. That's I hope Bentley get into more hybrids soon, because it does feel a little bit old-fashioned, a little bit tone-deaf almost. I remember saying this when I drove the V12 at launch at the end of 2019. It just feels like the ideal car to be electric, or to be hybrid at least. You know, it's big and wafty and heavy. It's already heavy. It's meant to be quiet. It may as well be electric. Yeah, first electric cars aren't coming till 2025, though.
Mega heavy, mega thirsty beast. Mm. Seems a little bit Jurassic now.
Mm.
And that's us saying that.
Yeah, exactly. We're not the target market. But yeah, we'll see. I believe a hybrid one is in the works, and then yeah, 2025 Bentley will be electrifying, and I think they're electrifying quite quickly after that. It makes sense. Bentley and Rolls-Royce, they should be doing electric cars.
So, Lotus have been in the car news this week.
They have, yeah. They've axed the entire lineup.
Yes, yeah, so the Elise, the Exige and the Evora will cease to be.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So they've got the Evija electric hypercar thing, 2 million quid, 2,000 horsepower. That's still happening, very much so. It's testing at the moment, and they'll be making them, I think, later this year. The first customer cars should be finished. And then after that, yeah, all new Lotus with funding from Geely.
The Chinese.
Yeah, the Chinese company that owns Volvo, Polestar, and the London Electric Vehicle Company that does all of the electric black cabs.
And it's going to be powered by a V6 hybrid.
Yeah, yeah, that's all they've said at the moment. It's called Type 131. Obviously it'll get another name, potentially Esprit. They might bring that name back. And yeah, I'm not sure what you've read. I heard it will fit above the Evora, which is currently sort of 85 to 90 grand, so they're going in at six figures straight away, which I think is a little bit bold.
And they're going to pay, I think I read they were going to pay, you know, some sort of tribute to the Esprit in this new car, which is reasonable boots to fill.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I feel the Esprit is sort of a supercar from a bygone age. I think we're both probably stretching back into our childhood a bit to even remember seeing an Esprit.
It's Bond.
Yeah, and of course the Bond era is what it's best known from.
I don't think this new one will be an underwater car. Especially being a hybrid. Electricity and water just doesn't work.
Yeah, no, that's true. I don't think Q-Branch can work their way around that one.
But actually, what I was reading, so the Elise was launched in 1995. So that's a 26-year-old design. It hasn't changed an awful lot.
No, it hasn't. I'm not sure how many clear generations they've had. I know of two, certainly, so I guess there have probably been three or four now. But it's not many.
The Exige, 21 years old, and the Evora, 13. Yeah. And I think all three of those designs are starting to look a little bit dated, or they've become undateable. You could buy a brand new one, or you could buy a 20-year-old one, and no one would really know.
They all look a bit tarted up now as well, don't they? I was looking at the Lotus website earlier, and I've thought this for a little while, that they keep releasing sort of newer models of the Evora, and every time it just feels like it's got a bigger wing. And I'm sure that's really mean, because I haven't driven any of these cars, but I do feel that it needed a fresh start, even for the Elise, which has been genre-defying for 20 years. Well, I feel a clean start is what the brand needed.
I'm potentially going to drive an Evora at some point. My friend is really taken by them. Sounds like a proper driverless car, manual, very basic, very light, very powerful. And we've sort of discussed going and taking a test drive, and I'm sure if COVID wasn't around, we'd have done that by now. But perhaps in the spring, if we can, I may go and drive an Evora, hopefully. And it does sound like a pretty good car.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I did sit in one, start it up, and listen to it, and it sounded pretty good, especially when you open the exhaust up. But it had a lot of like Ford component, recognisable components from other cars, in, which I quite liked.
Parts bin components.
But hey, if it works, then
why
not?
Yeah. I think they appeal to a certain type of person, don't they? But unfortunately, there aren't enough of those people to make a sustainable business. So the Lotus name is probably stronger than what it's actually making at the moment. And I wish them all the very best. And I'm sure they will do a good job. Geely has been very smart in giving money to Volvo and Polestar and just telling them to get on with it. You know, be the best you can be, but here's a blank check. So hopefully Lotus will get the same treatment. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to see what they come up with. We'll probably see a lot of run-out editions of the current fleet as well, so that they'll probably be dining out on those for a little while. I think it's good news. We will probably see a Lotus SUV at some point, or two, or a crossover.
I was about to say, like, it's nice, it's good of Geely. I mean, if you're going to make a lightweight sports car, leave it with Lotus.
Yes.
So if Geely just gave Lotus the checkbook and said, look, make a lightweight sports car, you know they're going to do a good job.
Yeah.
SUV, we'll see.
It's just the margins on them and their saleability is so high and so great at the moment. Their currency is so valuable.
But it's not very Colin Chapman.
It's not at all. No, it absolutely isn't. What was it? He famously said, simplify and add lightness. It'll be, you know, complicate and add another half ton. But Porsche proved this how long ago? 20 years ago, almost? First Cayenne? That if you make an SUV, people buy them, and that money then gets reinvested in the company, and we'd see the very best sports and supercars in Porsche's GT and RS range. And everyone else is doing it. Lamborghini's got an SUV, Aston Martin's got an SUV that will hopefully save the company from bankruptcy. Ferrari's going to have an SUV soon. I think it's a necessary evil, and I wouldn't put it past Lotus doing it.
Watch this space, then.
Indeed.
And we've got a small topic on Formula One news this week, because there's not been a lot of Formula One news lately. I don't think anyone's got COVID in the last 2 weeks.
from the paddock. We can't play your jingle this week.
So that feature was short-lived. But what has happened this week is Aston Martin released the first pictures of Seb Vettel in one of their Formula One cars. And he has a noticeably receded hairline.
Doesn't he just?
As in, he looks like a completely different person from last year.
He does. I thought it was photoshopped. I thought it was some meme or something that I'd missed, a joke that I'd not got the background of. But no, he's just cut his hair and...
That's what I thought as well. I thought, oh, this is some sort of meme about how crap last year's Ferrari was, but no.
It's aged him that much.
Vettel's just gone for his lockdown haircut, and he's obviously receding like most of us will or are doing. And he's just gone for it. It's a bold look for a professional sportsman.
He's still got it all on the sides, hasn't he? He hasn't quite gone with the buzz cut.
Yeah, it's just...
He's gone for the Stirling Moss.
Yeah, well, I thought this. I thought maybe he's kind of looking at Moss or perhaps Fangio.
Yeah.
And going for that sort of, well, receding a bit. Let's just shave it all off and go for the weight save and crack on. He actually looks a lot like Prince William. And apparently Prince William was trending because of this picture. Whether or not he joined Aston Martin, they're like, look, we want to convey quite a British look. And yeah. instead of going for like Sean Connery in his prime, he's gone for Prince William.
Famously, now I'm thinking of Prince Charles. I was going to say famously an Aston Martin driver. You know, Charles has got the Astons, hasn't he?
Well, maybe they just want him to look like your average Aston Martin owner. Sorry, Simon.
Oh, dear.
Oh, bless him. You know, I get some of these rich sports people, they go for the transplant, the Wayne Rooney.
Yeah, the Wayne Rooney, yeah. Others just embrace it.
Yeah, he's just embracing it. And yeah, good luck to him. He's changed teams and aged 20 years.
That Ferrari would have made anyone age 20 years, I suppose.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Wow. Yeah, and I guess the other thing we were going to talk about, our topic of the week, is cars of world leaders.
Yes, sort of indeed.
Official and ceremonial vehicles.
Yep. I'm just trying to find the link now. We were both... You came across a sort of infographic, and I'd been sent one by some press agency at the same time. I don't know if they're from the same source or what, but they're kind of similar but different. And
somebody did their homework, how varied they are, and then just sent it to everybody.
I think so, yeah. I think someone perhaps is just really into this as a topic. It's going to be their specialist subject on Mastermind one day. And they've sent it to a PR agency. They're varied, aren't they, these cars?
You don't really think about, really.
No.
Well, I sort of put them into, I guess, three categories is what I did.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially we've got a list of world countries. I think my one had 45 countries on it, and they're kind of presidential or royal cars of choice.
Yeah.
And the three categories I categorised them in were, number one, noteworthy cars, i.e. they had something a bit interesting about them, or they were a classic, or just very, very nice.
There's a few
nice
classics in there. Yeah.
The second one was basically just either a 7 Series, an S-Class, or an Audi A8, which is most countries.
Just a posh Uber, isn't it, at that point? A bulletproof Uber.
Yeah, and the third one is countries who have had to adopt one of their own as their kind of presidential
and they've been
car
to do so.
And this is
duty.
Some of them are like, yeah, some of this list is a little bit, oh, great. Oh, I'm the president. Oh, yeah. No, I'll drive one of them. No worries.
But you must drive a DS7 Crossback.
Yeah, so that's France. The official manufacturer of cars for the president of France is DS. And
yes, which is a branch of Citroën.
Yeah, so they drive a DS7 Crossback, which I got valued, I think, I didn't get it valued, but it was
56,000. Yeah. I've got on my list.
It was not a lot.
No.
In terms of some of these other cars, which go into the millions.
Well, the list I was sent was the ratio of how much the world leader's car is compared to the country's best selling car. In the case of Emmanuel Macron, his car is, they say, about 56,000. For the presidential spec DS7 Crossback, and that's only three times more than the country's best-selling car, which is the Renault Clio at 15,000. And top of the list is Queen Elizabeth II's Bentley, which they estimate to be £10 million against our best-selling car, which is the Ford Fiesta, which is 610 times cheaper.
She's been mugged off there, hasn't she? £10 million for a Bentley.
It does seem a lot. I haven't researched that, admittedly. I don't know where that figure's come from. It seems too rounded, doesn't it?
Well, yeah.
Like Angela Merkel's Audi is 959,000. I assume you can just go to Audi and buy one.
Like a bulletproof Audi.
Mm.
Well, North Korea was second on that list. I mean, I think Kim has a huge collection of cars he shouldn't have.
You're on first name terms.
Yeah, oh, sorry, what is it? Supreme Leader.
Do you know about his car collection? Is that a thing?
Well, yeah, so the imports of luxury goods are sanctioned by the UN to North Korea.
Mm.
So technically he shouldn't have new Mercedes, etc., but apparently he does, right. And he's got a Range Rover, I think, as well.
Right.
So, yeah, there's been something going on there. But on that list of cars of the people versus cars of the state, yes. North Korea, their most popular selling car is the Gaz 24 Volga, apparently, yes. according to this list.
According to this.
Which is like an awful Soviet car made in the 80s. And apparently that's their bestseller.
£4,000, apparently. I don't know where that figure's from.
I mean, I would be paying £4,000 for one. But, along with France having a car of their own, you've got Chinese have the Hongqi L5. Apparently it weighs 3 tons and is the most expensive car you can buy in China.
Mm.
The Czechs, their president has a Skoda Superb, obviously.
Of course.
Italy, apparently a Lancia.
Yeah, thesis. It looks like a Cadillac, what was it, the 300 was it called?
Is it? Were they part of the
it
same?
It probably is, isn't it? They're part of that new group, aren't they? Stellantis.
The Emperor of Japan has a Toyota Century with a granite entryway. Which sounds heavy.
Which bit of the car do you define as the entryway? Has it just got granite...
The door sill?
Sill plates, yeah. Like you can get those in carbon, can't you, from Ferrari or whatever.
This is just my granite entryway. Sill plates? It's just a door
sill. Please, cross the threshold. Come into my vehicle.
Welcome to the entrance. Sweden, they've got the Volvo S80, but like a stretched one. Looks pretty old school for the King of Sweden.
Yeah, looking at that, yeah.
And then, of course, our own Prime Minister drives a Jaguar XJ Sentinel.
Yes. Well, I guess that's what they call their armoured Jag.
The Sentinel.
I'm enjoying Tonga's 1949 Humber Pullman.
Well, this was in my category of just noteworthy cars.
Mm.
And yeah, the Tongo has, they drive, their sort of king drives a 1949 Humber Pullman.
Mm.
And apparently they're known for driving modest cars in their kind of royal
modest
fleet.
Classics.
Apparently the previous king toured the country in an old Austin FX4 black cab. You know, the black cab that was kind of from the 80s, 90s.
Mm, yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
The other one was Uruguay, and there's a...
I was about to say, this one stood out for me.
Yeah, well, apparently the president drives a 1987 Volkswagen Beetle. And I had to look into this because I thought, this can't be right. So there is a presidential fleet for Uruguay. But apparently the state car is a 2005 Vectra with armour plating. And other cars in their sort of presidential garage, so to speak, include Mitsubishi Galant, Toyota Corolla, Volkswagen Jetta, and Rover 75.
Right.
So no wonder the old president just thought, you know what, I'll just stick with my old Beetle.
And it says here he was given it by an old friend, apparently. And he was offered $1 million to sell it, and he said no because he didn't want to offend the friend who gave it to him. Hey, President Jose Mujica?
Yeah, well, he obviously just loves his Beetle. So
fair play.
Why not?
Fair play.
The Popemobile was on there.
Of course.
It's now
one that stood out for me. Sorry, go on. Popemobile fact.
Well, it's a Mercedes M-Class, but one thing I did learn is that Pope Francis himself owns a 1984 Renault 4. For when he needs to pop to the shops.
I was about to say.
And not take the Popemobile.
When he doesn't want to attract too much attention and doesn't want to wave at people in a glass box.
Although if you're driving a Renault 4 around Rome, you might look a little bit suspicious. Anyway, carry on.
No, one that stood out for me, and I had to fact check this because I didn't believe it. I'm trying to find it on the list. Was Australia and their Prime Minister's BMW 7 Series. And there are a few facts on this infographic. ballistic and bulletproof, 10 centimeter thick overlapping armored plates, the usual stuff. But it said each door weighs 250 kilos. And then it says that's enough to crush bones.
Was that a design feature? Is that the Toyota bone crusher?
If you reach inside the door, I will slam the door shut and crush your arm. Potentially. But no, I had to Google this and I found an article and they'd interviewed someone from BMW about this car. And that's where the stats are from. They're from the horse's mouth. The doors weigh 250 kilos, of which the glass is 150 kilos. Which I just find extraordinary. And yes, the bloke from BMW is the one who said, the doors are heavy enough to crush bones. So now you know.
There you go. Don't slam the door on a 7 Series.
No.
Well, there's probably a long wheelbase.
Be jolly careful of your fingers.
Probably a long wheelbase 7 Series, and them doors are big on the back there.
Mm. I'm not sure. It doesn't say it's an L, but maybe it is.
Well, I rode in a 7 Series long wheelbase last summer. We had one years ago, didn't we?
But I was about to say, I had one from work at one point with the massage seats and everything in the back.
Yeah, but going back to our original conversation about picking up the flooring from Wickes and a Bentley, it's all well and good buying an old long wheelbase 7 Series, but you can't fold the back seats down, can't do trips to the dump.
No.
And that was where I wrote it off as an option.
Otherwise, it'd be your ideal dump car.
Yeah, well, maybe just take the back seats out. I think it was a V12 as well.
Brilliant. That's probably just depreciation city, isn't it? Something like that.
Yeah, well, this was a mid to late 2000s example.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of affordable, but also wallet draining.
Oh, yeah. Potentially bankrupting.
Yeah.
One warning light comes on and you got to remortgage the house.
Yeah. So, or just live in that. But...
yeah. That's probably the same model of 7 Series that BMW took the piss out of in its own advert the other week.
Yeah, potentially, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but actually Germany... So, a lot of these cars on this list were Audi's BMW 7 Series or S-Classes. But the Germans have settled for an S-Class for their presidential car.
Yeah.
So I think Mercedes won with they had the most on the tally chart, so to speak, of presidential cars.
I imagine the Germans, and I think Jaguar Land Rover as well, they do sell sort of off-the-peg armoured vehicles. You can just go and buy one. I think, again, the article with the Australian BMW is BMW will sell you one, but I think you need permission from the government. But it is just, it is a vehicle that they make. It's not a case of buying one and then get it done elsewhere.
It's almost like...
So perhaps that's why.
It's almost not a car, but a piece of military hardware.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I think if you turned up to your dealership and asked to buy one, they'd want to ask some serious questions about why you need it.
Extra safety. Well.
We've learned something there, I feel.
Well, as usual with one of our chats. Hopefully we've... Just, opened your mind with all these useless facts about cars.
I wanted to mention something very briefly. It just occurred to me, I was driving a lot today. I think I was in a car, I was driving for about 7 or 8 hours today.
Time to think.
And it just, I really hope you, or at least someone else, does this. But if you're alone in the car and you yawn, as your mouth closes, you sort of do like a race car noise a little bit.
No.
Like, sort of thing. I don't know why.
No.
I don't know why. I did that in traffic earlier and sort of had to reassess my life a little bit.
Can't say I've ever done that. I often end up singing or
I'm really
terrible. When I've got the radio on in the car and, the second the song's finished and the adverts start, I often tell the radio to shut up. followed by a rude word, and then turn it over. I find myself talking to the radio, especially if someone like Jeremy Vine is on.
Yeah.
And he'll come on and go, "Oh, we're talking about Europe," and I'll go, "I'll cough." Mm. But I can't say I make racing car noises when I yawn.
That's probably the point of Jeremy Vine, isn't it? That you do tell him to cough. But Yeah, I don't know. I found myself doing that today, and maybe I'd gone a bit mad. But yeah, there you go.
I think
turning the sat nav to F off as well, or to shut up. I do that quite a lot.
If I was to ever look back through some of my dash cam footage, I'd probably be quite embarrassed by the singing or the swearing or the...
Or just the commentary of what's going on around you.
And even, like, I'm not really one for road rage, but if someone's a little bit dithery, I'll start swearing. But I don't mean to, I wouldn't say it to their face, but it's just...
No.
I just give me something to talk about, basically.
I sort of do it as if I'm just commentating on what's going on. I'll say things like, oh no, go on, you first. Or, oh no, oh, look what you've done now.
Oh, we'll wait all day,
At no more than speaking volume. I'm not shouting at the person. I'd be really embarrassed if they made eye contact with me. But I will just sort of commentate quite negatively on what they're doing.
It's more of a commentary rather than trying to be insulting. It's just...
Yeah. Anyway, I just thought I'd share that. I don't know why. You're welcome.
Well, I kind of wanted to close with a bit of a dedication, really.
Mm-hmm.
We lost a very close family friend this week, Robert, who was quite a big part of my childhood. He was 80. Very nice man, lived a long and happy life, thankfully. But he was quite an interesting case with his cars, because throughout his life he stuck with one car manufacturer. Would you like to hazard a guess of what a man of 80 had his entire life of cars? So he would have had his first one in, I don't know, the 60s or the 70s.
Yeah. So many have just disappeared, haven't they? The name hasn't changed, has it?
No, a classic British name.
Vauxhall.
Bang on. So he had...
didn't have a Victor like you, did he?
He didn't, although when I first got that car, I took it straight round there for him to have a look at, but he didn't have a Victor. But he did have two Astras, a Vectra, four Cavaliers, a Belmont, which is an Astra with a boot, the Chevette, and two Vivas, as far as we can remember. So I think that's quite a rare case in... life, finding someone that's so dedicated to a single car brand.
And did he move around much, or was his local dealer his best mate?
As far as I'm aware, he pretty much lived in the same town his entire life. So,
interesting.
Yeah, just very much must have had a Vauxhall, really liked it, and just cracked on and kept going with them. And he always bought especially recently, I remember he always went for the kind of elite or the top spec one. So he didn't mess around with his Vauxhalls. He bought the best ones.
I mean, they say that brand loyalty is so important in the automotive business, and I think that demonstrates that so clearly, doesn't it? That if you're happy with the brand from day one, you'll just stick with them. Like, why would I try something else? I know that they're good. You know, presumably that's what he thought after his first, and then stayed with them. Good for him.
Yeah. So. Here's to you, Robert, basically. Are you enjoying a drink after your day on the road?
Oh, we forgot to cover drinks this week, didn't we? I'm having a glass of red wine now, but earlier I had some Piston Gin, which is collaborating with Morgan. And the obvious joke, of course, is that you're pissed on Piston Gin.
I think I sent that to you within about three minutes of you posting.
Yes.
You'll get pissed on that.
Yeah, indeed. It's really good, actually. I'm not being paid to say that. I bought it, but it's good. Collaborated with Morgan, and it's infused with ash wood, obviously, because Morgan's are made from the stuff. And it's pretty good.
Sounds quite nice. I've got one of some Belgian beers I got in a Christmas box.
Oh, yeah.
And it's Blanche Brussels white beer. And it's the one where it seems to have a toddler taking a piss on the label.
Yes.
Yeah, that one.
From that famous fountain.
Yeah, I mean, you can't actually see the stream of piss, but that's definitely what he's doing. But it's quite a nice beer. It's going down quite nice on a Friday evening.
Very good, yeah. It's good to do this on a Friday, I think it works well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have a working week exactly at the moment, but
no,
you kind of still get that Friday feeling.
Yeah.
So I had a takeaway tonight. Now I'm having a couple of beers doing this with you. So, yeah.
Treat yourself. Lovely.
Exactly.
Right. Well, I hope whatever our listeners are doing, if they are indeed still listening, I hope they're also enjoying themselves on their Sunday morning or whenever they're listening to this. And yeah, I'd just like to say, as always, thank you very much for listening and leaving the feedback that you do and giving us the star ratings on your podcast playing app, wherever you get it from. We're available on Apple and Spotify and I think pretty much all of the major podcast platforms. And yeah, thank you very much for listening and we will see you next time.
Yes, thanks very much. And I hope this is our mindless wittering on has killed a bit of your day.
Congratulations, you've passed an hour. There are only 8 more to go today. Well done.